This is day one of my podcast series about healing and reconnection. What Psyche's Ventures is about is an exploration to the journey I've been on, rediscovering myself at the age of 34, learning once again how to move beyond external appearances into the world of the soul and what it takes to look at everyday life with fresh eyes and gain a new perspective beyond the limitations that may exist for me. And so now I'm sitting in the Via Rail terminal at Union Station in Toronto. I'll leave towards Windsor at 6:45 a.m. What it took to get here this morning was a determination, that's for sure. There's been a major blizzard and snowstorm. So to get to my final destination, it's taken quite a bit this morning. I got up pretty much at 4 a.m. just to get here. And so it seems that in these sort of conditions, we find human kindness in the least likely of places, just showing us that we're not alone in these times. And it's our ability to connect with others at this level of the heart that really spreads the true magic for me. It brings any tragedy to a standstill. And so it was this morning where I was standing at the bus stop. I climbed through several snowbanks to get there at Yonge Street, and the man at the bus stop started a conversation with me. We'd connected over our travel issues and all of the things that got us to where we were that morning. Any of the Ubers weren't coming around and there were no taxis or anything, so we were pretty much waiting for any bus to come by. I barely made it to my bus on time, and he basically convinced the driver to wait for me, which was really kind of him. And as I was waiting to get on the bus, I was actually at Starbucks and almost missed it, but the man that I was speaking to convinced the driver to wait for me. And as I hurried and lugged my massive suitcase onto the bus, the bus driver basically just gave me this eye contact, and he just smiled at me and nodded and said not to worry about the payment and handed me a ticket. And I kept that ticket and thought, you know, this is real human kindness and our ability to connect to each other. I could see in his eyes that there was a real compassion and a kindness. And it gave me hope, a hope that, you know, that despite all the struggles to get through from all the problems with my train yesterday and my plane and my not getting there on time, everything was okay and that I was in the right place at the right time. So it's just this trust and the hope that others have the ability to give us in each moment if we're aware of these things. So I am on the train on my way, and the rumbling in the background is what you're hearing from the train. Just speaking on awareness of how others communicate to us from the heart, this kind of opens up a new kind of connection which we may or may not be aware of in every moment, in all activities, which I realized that when we put the intention of speaking so another person can hear you, we're actually opening up ourselves to communication at a different level. So rather than putting a barrier up and not making eye contact and not showing the body language that we are open to communicate, that heart connection can't really be made. So when I made eye contact with the bus driver, I knew that my thoughts were that of being grateful, and I think that my expression communicated that as well. So everything that we say or think in every moment can either polarize and alienate us from others and convince us how separate we are, or they can support our desire to communicate and move closer and get out of the myth of isolation and separateness that we're all caught in oftentimes, and especially in times of distress or when there's a winter storm, when there's a, you know, something doesn't go our way, we're more likely to go into a state of isolation and separateness. So how can we cultivate in every moment just a sense of curiosity and good-heartedness towards ourselves and others as a result? So one of the things that came was that we must courageously face what's really there in our thoughts and in our words and how we communicate those things. So being honest and gentle with what that self-communication reveals to us. So I ask you, what do storms really mean to you? And are they merely an inconvenience and something to complain about? Or can they be where we slow down and clarify our thoughts and intentions? So do you think that the pesticide use in our, farms and everywhere in the environment is causing the toxin overload?
They have to go somewhere, right? The chemicals are, whether they are used in for spraying the food or, you know, preventing insects and whatnot, or they're used for fertilizer. I mean, it all eventually goes into the water table or into the air, or both. That's what that whole one man, one cow, one planet, you know, the Steiner biodynamics thing was all about, when that guy realized that those Indian farmers were killing themselves out of this, like, self-disgrace thing that they were experiencing. You know, not that that was the answer, but that was their frustration, is that they had let down themselves and their families and their people by having bought into this, you know, this type of farming with the chemicals. And eventually, after a number of years, and not even that many years, I don't remember exactly from what they said in the movie, but the nutritional value of the soil had depleted so much it was basically like dust. And so when this guy heard about it, I can't remember his name, but he lived in New Zealand, and he had been teaching and doing the biodynamic farming that Rudolf Steiner developed. He and his wife packed up everything from New Zealand and moved to India to make it, you know, like his dream. He was an older dude, and to make it his life's purpose from that point, at least for that section of his life, to teach these Indians how to do the biodynamic farming, and to switch their, you know, to change the soil around. One thing I remember a long time ago from this old Indian guy that lived up in northern Michigan, and he said, we just, you know, the more that farming is about growing it in one place and shipping it to another, the idea of compost is virtually impossible, because once you've taken all those nutrients out of the soil in the way of a plant or fruit or whatever it is, and then ship it someplace else, or we eat it and then we get rid of the waste through the, you know, the sanitary systems of today, rather than having it go into a latrine or you know, some outhouse in the back of the property, then we've taken that much nutrients, that much, you know, contribution that would normally go back into the soil in some form of composting, away from that property. Mm. And he said also with with modern furnaces that where people used to use fire and coal, mostly fire for heating their homes, that ash would be given back to the land. You know, even if it was in a fireplace, they would take it out to clear out the fireplace, they would take it back out to the property and put those nutrients back. You know, that ash is a valuable component of the soil. So all these things started to deplete it. And this is the amazing thing when I read about Rudolf Steiner, he also did the Montessori school, the Waldorf school, a bunch of other stuff. I mean, he's written books on the Atlanteans and the Myrians. I mean, the guy was, it just boggles my mind that over 100 years ago, these guys were playing with stuff that people are still not aware of today. Mm-hmm. That he had local farmers come to him, and this whole biodynamic thing, that's how it developed, was that they were talking about just that, is that, we as farmers make our living by selling our vegetables and fruits to people in other areas, but what they were noticing is that depletion of the nutrients of their soil by doing so, and that's basically how he got thinking about how he could, enrich the soils that these farmers were experiencing the depletion of. It's fascinating to me how, and he drew on the whole spiritual, the fact that they, that they take the bull's horn and they pack that nutrient-rich, I can't remember what he called it, but there's something where they pack it in that horn, and then they bury that for an X amount of time in the soil, and then they bring it back up. So the whole process is very spiritual and very, even the spreading of it, they do in a spiral pattern. So when they're flinging the liquid, the tea that they use from the composting, they actually do it in this sacred geometry type way with the spiral. I mean, it's fascinating what he tapped into for that whole process. So, I mean, it's, maybe 10, 15 years ago when I was screaming from the mountaintops about Monsanto, chemtrails, and smart meters, and, all this pollution that we've been aware of, certainly since before I went to college, which is why I went where I went. It is changing, and I think that was part of my awareness back in that time when I kind of stepped off my platform with that and realized that, I was actually adding energy to it by pushing up against it. And realized that, if I really were to look, even though it seems like things are getting worse and worse and worse and worse, which on some level, they are, but at the same time, there's been an awakening of sorts where, even if some of it's misguided, that people are becoming more and more aware of what works and what doesn't work as far as nutrition and plants and toxins and things we're putting in the air and things we're putting in the ground and things we're putting in the water. And, I think it is changing, but it's never, super fast. I mean, if you look at that, where Steiner came up with biodynamics 100 years ago, and it's only been like 10 years since I even heard about it, with some of the people in northern Michigan and Canada that are doing, some of the biodynamic farming. Things change, but maybe not as fast as we would like, and that's that impatience of the ego that.
So what role do you think that the companies like Monsanto and these sort of places are trying to get people to buy into their products? And what is it about the fertilizers and the pesticides that are so appealing to people?
Just like everything else, you know, it's like we've talked about with the metaphysical, spiritual, new age world, everybody, you know, we've been taught that there is a quick fix to everything. And that's probably the biggest lie we've been told. Yes, things can change in an instant, and yet if the programming has been the opposite way for 1,000 years, it's unlikely and very rare, I think, that something, you know, changes overnight. It may seem that it does, but it's actually the culmination of a process that, you know, that is not necessarily taken 1,000 years to turn around, but certainly, you know, some wheels had to turn, some gears had to reverse in order to have, you know, that epiphany, that transformation, that awareness, right? So, you know, it's like when people talk about Trump. I mean, there is a contribution of everything, and if we can stop for a minute and really look, that things can change really, really fast, and yet to look for that instant cure, that instant turnaround. A lot of times we're just looking at dealing with the symptom rather than the cure, and I think that's what's happened with modern medicine. I think that's what's happened with modern farming. You know, we've kind of tipped the tables a little bit and made, you know, things that aren't so valuable, valuable, and the things that are super valuable, you know, like, not. And I think that that's what's really turning, is that people are starting to realize that this thing that we call time is limited in a human lifetime. And, you know, if we use it for, you know, like the 9-to-5 Puritan work ethic, and then, you know, just, oh, wow, I can't wait till I have enough money in the bank and get to the age of 60 or 55 or 65 or whatever your number is to do this thing called retirement. And basically we've enslaved ourselves for 30 or 35 years and bought into that tribal wave thinking of, you know, this is what I've got to do because everybody else did it. And then all of a sudden, you know, wake up to the fact that it's all been a lie. I think that's really what's happening today. And my experience is that in the last, especially the last 5 or 10 years, the metaphysical, spiritual, new age conversation has gotten to be a little bit more of that, bought into almost that instant cure type of thing too, where we've talked about clearing, and we've talked about, you know, body processes and certain things that people are looking for the instant turnaround, and not really understanding that whole thing about, you know, happiness is a journey, not a destination. And that's really what I've heard the master, you know, the guys like Osho and Krishnamurti and Stuart Wilde and you know, Eckhart Tolle, and, you know, all these, you know, today's version of a guru, whether they are or they aren't, doesn't really matter. But that's what they're talking about, is letting every moment of your life be the experience and the joy and the happiness of the transition, rather than thinking that there's some place to get. Because they've talked about it for years, Ram Dass and all those guys. I mean, they talk about, you know, there's no there there. Everybody thinks that there's some place to get, and there isn't. It's right where you are right now. That's what, you know, that's what the now is. That's what is. So, you know, I think that awakening that happens with, you know, things that when the pendulum swings way to the other side, seemingly like Trump or like Monsanto or, you know, chemtrails, you know, the good out of it is that it wakes up a few more people. And that's really all that this is ever about, is just becoming more awake.
So in a way they serve to do that, even though the long-term effects could be really... The long-term health effects, I mean, in terms of the sickness that people get from, you know, toxic overload and...
Well, I remember hearing Deepak say one time that, you know, it smoking is not the most healthy thing that one can do for your body, but if you believe, like if you buy the thought that cigarette smoking causes cancer, then in all likelihood you're going to exacerbate that and you're going to get cancer from smoking cigarettes. Very much like Gary Douglas would say about, you know, if you put the thought in there that, that eating a potato chip will make you fat, then your body's going to respond in honoring of that thought to your, you know, to your brain, to your, you know, to that thought, that it will make you fat. And somebody that doesn't hasn't bought that idea that a potato chip or eating potato chips will make you fat, they don't have that. Because there's a lot of people that eat potato chips and don't get fat.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.